Hello, and welcome to The Library Coven, a bi-weekly podcast in which two bookish besties discuss mostly YA fantasy through the lens of intersectional feminist criticism. Why? Because talking about books is pretty magical. I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kelly. And we are taking to the seas in this episode, and we are discussing The Wicked Bargain by Gabe Cole Novoa, which tells the story of Mar, a magical NB / genderqueer / trans guy whose father made a deal with the literal devil that comes back to haunt everyone involved. It's a book about chosen family, survivor's guilt, alchemizing self-loathing, learned from the wider society, and picking your battles, obviously, against colonizers. We'd love to see it.
Initial reactions. Kelly, you wrote in first. So proud.
I did it, you all. Gold star for me. Yay, gay pirates. I can't get enough of them. I listened to the audiobook, which is narrated by Vico Ortiz, which I'll talk about later, but they're just like perfect for it. And I really enjoyed following along with Mar's journey. It seems like a standalone novel, but I would for sure pick up a sequel if another existed. I loved this book. I thought it was great.
Yes, I also listened to the audiobook, which was fantastic. I love this book. 5 out of 5 stars. No notes.
No notes. Except for the incoming 35 minutes of notes.
Yeah. recommend if you like.
I would say Our Flag Means Death. Hopefully they revive the show because they canceled it after the second season, which is bullshit. Yeah, Queer Pirates, Chosen Family. It like is perfect. Cemetery Boys by Aidan Thomas for like Latine trans guy magical protagonist is one of the ones I was thinking. And also Queen of the Conquered by Kaysen Callender for more revolutionary plots and like very nuanced, complicated feels.
Which is an adult book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that note. How did I do? This is normally your territory.
You did great. We were thinking the same books, although I did not remember the Kaysen Callender book, so I think that was a good choice. While you were talking, I also thought of Hook, you know, like the Peter Pan remaking with, what is his name, Robin Williams?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's very piratey, found family, lost boys.
Yes.
And I was obsessed with that movie when I was a kid, so there you go. Why did we choose this book? I think Kelly chose this one, and it was a great one. And also, thank you for picking a book that's a standalone so we don't also have to read 5 million books after
it. Doesn't happen very often. I think I was just scrolling through Libby and was like, set my filters to audiobooks and available now. And this one, I kept like scrolling past and was like, oh, this looks like so perfect, so niche for what we love to talk about.
Yeah. And I don't think we've done many pirate stories, if any, before that I can think of, like off the top of my head. So also fun to do something new adventure fantasy wise.
Oh, yeah. I think we did Gentleman's Guide. But a
oh,
long
yeah. That
time
was
ago.
So long ago. I've totally forgotten.
I know. That was so many years ago at this point. And also, honestly, not of the caliber of this book, I would say. All right, let's talk about world building in Through the Wardrobe. So we are set in the summer of 1820 in the Caribbean, marauding all through the islands and the different coves and all the things. This is also a time where there were a bunch of national movements for independence, which comes up in the plot, which I thought that the plot did a really good job of being like, we're setting ourselves in a historical moment and we're fictionalizing off of that. But I thought there was a lot of like good information about things like geopolitics that were going on at the time. Islands and coastal locales. We had Vieques, which is an incredible place in so-called Puerto Rico. It's like a hub for biodiversity and it's protected now. And then Isla Mujeres, which I've been to actually a few times because my mom was doing like medical mission work down there. So like I just eye rolled at myself. Sorry, everyone, for having to admit it. But yeah, so I've been down there a few times and it's just fucking beautiful, gorgeous, amazingness, like amazing. So I thought that was well done. The sort of integrating the like actual globe and the actual politics with some magic and some fiction.
I would agree. I don't know how we didn't put this on recommend if you like, but like very Pirates of the Caribbean-esque.
Oh my God.
Like, I don't know how we missed that.
Totally. I'm adding it right now so I don't forget.
But I love like the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. So yeah, like very like, you know, piratey. I don't know.
Yeah, it was very like I was, you know, singing the little theme song in my head, the do 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 do.
Oh yeah. Or if you're on TikTok, I get a lot of like Northern Sea videos, and they have like this very specific sound that they use with it, which is not a place I've been to, but I was also just like, the sea is terrifying, so like I could never be a pirate. But if you're on TikTok, that kind of goes with this vibe.
It's like a, yeah, like a mood board for the the book.
Lots of blue.
Yeah, the sea is terrifying. Like, you have very little control over what you are at the mercy of the weather and the climate and all the things. Oh my gosh. One of the like main focuses, I think, of the book is like this, like zeroing in on or zooming in on this pirate ship life as like kind of a place of possibility where you can do things differently than, you know, is maybe done on land or in communities that were like, that have like, I don't know, that are like policed, I guess, by whether that's colonial forces or maybe like super traditionalism. But it's also like the pirate ship isn't necessarily like a liberatory space. It's like you can replicate all of those same harmful, oppressive power dynamics that you have on land. But it is, I feel like sometimes, especially in fiction, like current artists can maybe get a little bit like, can romanticize it a little bit, you know, and think like, oh, it was only this escape where everyone got to be like, it was like a queer utopia over there. And it's like, I love that we can imagine that for ourselves. And at the same time, we can be like, it was, I mean, queer people have intergroup problems also, you know what I mean? So it's not,
yeah,
it's like this on this knife edge between like utopia and dystopia, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know why I put this. I was like, I'm not sure what this means, but that's what I wrote in the notes. Cause I was like, I don't know what that means. Locus of possibility. But Kelly, I explained it so well. Now I do understand, but I really enjoy seafaring adventure stories. Like going back to like Hook, Peter Pan, like, Pirates of the Caribbean. The ocean is just like so vast, and like so much of it is unexplored. If Deanna's listening to this right now, then, she would talk about how like she doesn't believe we've been to the moon because, you know, whatever, because we haven't explored the ocean. That's a joke. Deanna does know we've been to the moon, but there's just like something special about being out on the water that I love. As long as I can see land and wear a life vest, because I'm not the strongest swimmer, but I don't know. I grew up close-ish to the ocean, so it was just like a thing we did. We would go to the beach in the summer, and my godfather would take us fishing on like his boat. So I don't know. I just really like the ocean. So like having that as the setting for a story is just so fun for me. There's also a lot of Spanish used throughout the story in the dialogue. One of the many things I like about audiobooks is I can hear the language as it's meant to be spoken. And there's just something special about that. I'm sure for like the author as well, to know that people are hearing it the way that it's meant to be and not just like my terrible Spanish accent in my head. So I really enjoyed that aspect, even though I didn't always know what was being said, but there were like enough clues that I think someone who had even less Spanish knowledge than me would be able to like pick up on what's going on without a problem, like without like misunderstanding what's going on. But I always like that in an audiobook when I get to hear, you know, how the language is spoken.
That's a really good point about audiobooks. Yeah. And I think that like authors and their teams get to pick who narrates. So like you send in like audition tapes or whatever, and then they get to pick. So we know that the author picks someone who, yeah, can faithfully reproduce that language and is from that culture, which is great.
Yeah. I also really like the aspect of the book where they came across a ship with enslaved folks and gave them options. The author just mentions that many pirates also enslaved Africans when they came across slave ships, but I like the idea of pirates that fought not just for like the freedom of their own people, but for others as well. I just thought this was like an interesting aspect to add to the story, because we also see like Mar, the main character, kind of like talking about how some pirates would just like enslave them as well. So this was just like a good thing to add, especially in like stories that take part in the Caribbean, because I think sometimes people forget like Black people are from there as well. So I just appreciated that, you know, that this was added into the story. Let's discuss all things magic.
I thought we could start with Mar, because they're the, besides the demons and demonios, they're like the main magical entity that we like really focus on in the book. And they have fire and ice magic. it seems like they go on this journey from repressing and being afraid of their power and being like, oh, how do I, you know, square this circle of I have fire and ice, you know, these sorts of like, I don't know, opposite ends, opposite kinds of magic, for lack of a better word. But then there's ultimately like this journey of like acceptance and integration. And like I said at the top, kind of processing, alchemizing this like self-hatred and loathing that's learned from the wired society. And yeah, because it's like historically for Mar has not been safe to, you know, practice their magic openly. So we have like a closed magical system. And then I enjoyed seeing Mar eventually come to this point of it's like, I don't have to repress this stuff that's inside me. I feel like this is a common theme. We'll talk about it with House of Marion too. It was, which we'll be recording after this one. I feel like we see this a lot in YA where the character is like afraid of slash has not been, is not familiar with their, because of like all the unknowns, you know, they haven't taken the chance to get to know themselves and their magic and their power. And then the repressing it causes pain, which I thought like was really like viscerally described really well. I enjoyed the descriptions of the magic and also like the repression of the magic. And, you know, it made me like I could almost feel what that would be like in your body, you know? Yeah, but that's kind of Mar's character arc, I think.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons we see this so often in young adult novels in particular, because they're, you know, they're written by adults who can like look back on their time in young adulthood and as teenagers or middle graders or whatever, like they can look back on that time and see like the parts of themselves they've repressed to like fit in with society or fit in around their friends. And just like, they're just discovering so much about themselves, and not that that like stops when you become an adult. But I think these kinds of stories are particularly powerful for young people to like show them that like you should try and get to know yourself better. Like you shouldn't just repress everything about yourself to fit in better with society. There are some things you probably shouldn't do, like don't murder people, you know, like if you have the urge to do that, maybe go talk to somebody. But like normal day to day, like you should learn to be yourself and learn who you are. The unexamined life is not worth living. And I think that is not a quote for me. I think that's like Plato or Aristotle, but I do think that is true. And I think it's something that you kind of have to learn to do. And I think young adult books kind of like give young people the permission to do that.
Yeah. You explained that so perfectly. Follow the where the shame is, where the repression is, where the fear is, like that is, there's more to be explored there. And that's potentially where the gold is, where the magic is, you could say.
Where the magic is.
It's all coming full circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of magic and wish fulfillment and amazingness, like magical top surgery in this book, I loved it. I was like, why have I not seen this in a book before? It's like, we should have this. Trans people should have whatever body modifications they want because cis people get them all the time slash covered by insurance. I just thought it was like, so I don't know why my mind was so blown by this, but I was just really enjoyed it. It like happening magically. And there's like no 6, 8, 12. 14 week like recovery process. It just happens, and then they're just like so happy with it. And it's sometimes it's nice to just have like a little uncomplicated gender moment. You know, talking more about magic, we have Dami's shifting powers, the changing their gender presentation all over the place. That was cool to see. And then you see Mar being like, oh man, I wish I could do that. And yeah, just such like a queer desire to be like, I want to be this one day and this the other day. And Dami was like, for me, I was imagining like a Latine Jonathan Van Ness kind of from Queer Eye. But yeah, just like this mix of what you would, you know, society would call masculine versus what society would call feminine, and just like fucking with it all over and mixing it however they want. I liked that character. I thought they were cool.
I thought they were cool as well. It's funny that you imagine like Jonathan Van Ness, because I imagine like Jenna Ortega-esque, like Wednesday-esque kind of vibes from Dami. I thought it was a cool and interesting like character. And, you know, thinking about like, you know, books for young adults, I also think that like young adults generally just don't know who they are and are trying on these different like personalities, clothing styles, hairstyle, you know, just trying everything out to kind of figure out like, who am I? What do I want to be? How do I want to present myself? So I thought this was like an interesting thing to add in, because I mean, I've known lots of people like as, you know, a young person who would like come to school week to week as a different person. And so I also thought this was like, this is very like teenagery, exploring who you are.
And so Dami is a demonio, which is like a lower rung of magical being than the Diablos, which are like the higher ups in this like magical power hierarchy. And it was like so totally a pyramid scheme. It was like so totally an MLM. It was like kind of hilarious because like the Diablos get more of their power the more people that they like, whose souls they can take or whatever. And then the demonios are like the foot soldiers of the Diablos, and they have to go on recruiting, and then and it's like they're supposed to get more power with the more people they recruit under them, and the people under them just get like totally fucked over. And I have never seen this like fictionalized or magicalized before, but I think it's like honestly pretty genius. It's almost like this vampiric way of going about gaining power. It's like you're taking, and there's, you know, consent, but like asterisk, right? Because do these people really understand the magnitude of what they're consenting to? Kind of like a fairy deal. We've seen those a lot over the course of the show, but I thought that this was like honestly pretty genius. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and like what a good way to like introduce young people to like these MLM schemes. I don't know about you, but I've definitely gotten messages from like, especially women from high school being like, hey, do you want to join this thing? And I'm like, oh my God, no. Like, this is obviously a scam.
We do not need more supplements, so no. I don't need those leggings. I'm good.
If my doctor didn't tell me to take it, I'm not taking it. But I also thought it was really interesting, like you mentioned, seeing Mar, Bass, and Dami trying to like outsmart the Diablo, like very fey, like, you know, that's not what you said. And because of what you said, we have to do it this way, like, you know, whatever. So I just thought that was like really cool because I haven't really seen it much outside of like fairy magic.
Mm-hmm. Totally. All right. Well, this is a perfect segue because MLMs could also go in Kylo Ren. I was like, where do I put this? So our big bad in the show is El Diablo, which there's more than one Diablo. So that was, it wasn't like Catholicism, the devil, you know, sort of thing. So, but that took me a minute to figure out. I was appreciating that, you know, it went beyond that sort of eschatological, I don't know, framing. So El Diablo is, turns out, shocker, Garcia Lopez, which I think I got the name right, who is like the head in the book, at least. I don't know if this is like for real. Was the head of the Spanish colonial military apparatus based in San Juan, Puerto Rico. I was like, oh, of course it would be the same thing. It would, of course, the colonizer would also be like the Diablo vampire. It would just mapped on mm-hmm. perfectly. And I wasn't like mad about it.
Agreed. I did not see that little twist coming at the end. So it was also like kind of a surprise, which I don't think we get super often because we read so much YA that like, that's not much surprises us anymore.
We can see things coming or there's like clues dropped, but I didn't really see any of those.
No, but it didn't seem like so out of the blue that you're like, this is unbelievable either. So I did. Yeah. Very good. Like talking about, you know, coloniality and all those things. And then I guess evilness of them by making him a devil.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And just like kind of how metaphorically it maps on perfectly, the like plunder of people's power and resources, you know, that the Diablos get their power from. And that's what also colonial powers get their power from. I think like at the beginning, we get Dami framed as like a potential villain because, you know, we don't know what their background is. And it seems like Mar is wary of this person. Is like, is they want to use me for something, which is like totally true. He, you know, they did. They're kind of like this morally gray character that's like redeemed, I think, at the end because we find out more about their history. What do you think?
I don't know. Like, it's hard because they're kind of like a victim of circumstance, but at the same time, they did some really like fucked up shit. So I'm also kind of like, I don't know. Are you redeemed? Like, you still did some bad things, but like you were also sold by your mom to a literal devil. But then you were also like stealing people's souls still, you know? So I'm just like, maybe they don't need to be redeemed. Maybe it's a gray area, so it gets to stay gray.
We can be comfortable with the gray area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Onward, magical friends. Just as one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply read fantasy without talking about representations of race, class, gender, and ability. This is our segment about power and bodies and how they relate.
So the obvious one here I can start with. Mar is non-binary / trans mask. There's a lot of descriptions of gender dysphoria, feelings, and thoughts in the book, which I thought were handled tenderly, but also unflinchingly. You know, because it is like a lot of discomfort, and the author really like leaned into explaining what the internal world is like when you're feeling those sorts of things, or when this person is feeling that, because it's also different for everyone. I loved how they came from, like, their family was using Ije and, you know, various other non-binary terms in Spanish when referring to them. And I also appreciated this like moment where Mar's thinking about like what that good enough is also like plenty gender wise. This came up, I think, when Bass calls them like a beautiful boy. And so they're like reveling in that sort of like juxtaposition, even though, you know, the fact that like the two are opposite, like beautiful and boy, is like completely artificial, socially constructed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the gender bendiness is where they feel more comfortable and, you know, have a lot of dysphoria around their chest. There was also like, you're like, okay, this person knows what binding is about, the author, because they talked about like, they took the time to be like, how would this actually work in 1820? You know, and it's like they had a specific piece of clothing that was made for them by someone else. And they're talking about wanting to undo it, needing to undo it at night, but also not wanting to. But also there were circumstances where they didn't feel like they could undo it because they were, you know, being more surveilled or whatever. Yeah, so I appreciated to that conversation in the book, because it was literally like PSAs and / informational, like little tutorials, I guess, kind of throughout.
Yeah, and it was very interesting because, you know, we've read a lot of stories with queer characters where like their queerness is the issue. I don't want to say like issue, but, you know, but like no one around Mar has, I think this kind of speaks to your next point, but like no one around Mar kind of takes issue with their non-binary transness. It's more like internal, as opposed to Mar being like, people don't see me this way. So I just thought that was like an interesting thing to like have in the book, to be dealing more with like the internal feelings of who you are instead of like the outward, what do other people think of me? You know what I mean? Like I really appreciated that in this story, that it was like, you're like, who am I to myself, not who am I to other people? And I just thought that was like a very interesting and different way to talk about like gender, the gender spectrum. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, like it's an inside job at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that they could focus on that, yeah, because they made Mar essentially like a passing, like a mask passing character, right? I think the conversation would have been different maybe if they were not 16, maybe if they were, you know, 22 and puberty had run its course or something like that. I think maybe we would have gotten, you know, would have played out differently in the book. But yeah, it's not like they're not experiencing like a bunch of like social repercussions or, you know, discrimination or things like that because of the, yeah, they're able to pass and stuff.
Yeah, like there's like no people like using the wrong pronouns for them. They're just like, it's almost like very not transphobic, you know, like the society seems like very accepting. And like, you're right, I think part of that is because Mar is passing, but I think this is like a good book for young people to be like, there are places and spaces where this is possible, even if it's not possible everywhere. So I just like that aspect of it.
Totally. You're right. This is a good, it also fits in with the next point I put in here, but I was kind of curious that Mar never navigated the whole like I'm trans disclosure thing, because like disclosure is like a big, I don't know, it's like a looming cloud, because it's like, how do you handle, and it's so contextual, it's so circumstantial, it depends on who you're talking with and like, yeah, where you are. But yeah, like you were saying, like transness was not like the center of the drama in the whole novel, which I appreciate. Instead, like, I'm magical is the disclosure, quote unquote, problem that Mar has. So, yeah, I was just kind of curious that the author made that decision. And I'm not like opposed to it at all. I was just kind of surprised me that that was, it seemed like something Mar was so worried about all the time. But like you said, it's not something that the outside world was so worried about. And so we get that like disconnect between like the internal struggle and the outside world being like, okay, yeah, you're a dude, and Mar being like, that feels good to me.
Well, and I think, you know, again, because this book is written for young adults, I don't know if it's like kind of trying to point to like not everyone is concerned with you, kind of like, I think when you're young, everything is like me all the time, like what do people think about me, how do I project my, you know, and it's less about that because Mar is like so accepted, that I wonder if the author is trying to be like, figure out who you are for yourself instead of who you are for other people. And I think that's really important, because I think it is really easy to be like, I'm going to take this from this person and this from this person and this from this person, instead of being like, well, who do I want to be as a person? So I think it's just like somewhere in there, like in that realm of like becoming who you are for your own sake and not for other people. And maybe this is also just supposed to be like the author being like, we can imagine a world, or like the author wants to imagine a world where like being trans is not, you know, something that other people concern themselves with about, you know, the trans person, which is also just like a part of fantasy. And I think science fiction is like just imagining these other worlds where people can just be who they are without, you know, the pieces of them being a problem.
Yeah, they didn't have to come out of this particular closet. It was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got various cis gay men repped in the story, which I, you know, appreciate. I think it's great. Mar's dad was queer, or is, because he didn't die at the end. They got him back at the end, I think. And then same with Baz's dad. So yay, gay pirates. We love to see it. There should have been more in mainstream media. But alas, our flag means death is all we have.
Yeah. And the author's notes kind of points to this, like how fairly normal practice for pirates at the time to like marry each other or be in like, I forget what it's called, like, you know, like when you're kind of married but not married.
Partnership? Domestic partnership?
Yeah. Like where they would like sign their stuff over to the other person, like when they die. So, and like in the United States, there's always jokes about men in the Navy. So, you know, I think it's just normalizing that is a good thing to do. On the author's part, and so it was fun to see.
Yeah, totally.
Mars descended from a people who have not been colonized, so I think he's actually, you know, partly from his mom on that side, and then I'm guessing the people of his dad on the other side. But colonization played like a very large role in this story, as it does in a lot of the books that we read. Yeah, I just thought this was interesting to like have like people who haven't been colonized but like still dealing with the issue of colonization throughout the story, from the point of view of the Spaniards. And I feel like we also haven't read a lot of books where we talk about the Spaniards. Like, I feel like we don't talk about them enough and how shitty they were. So
yeah, not good.
No. I don't know why they get a pass.
Yeah, they should not get a pass. Definitely not. Having studied the history and culture, no. All right. It's shipwreck time, and it's literally a ship. There's ships in this, so it makes sense. This segment, finally. Let's talk about asexuality, sexuality, sex, romance, and relationships. And I think all the shipping has been done for us this time. Found/chosen family, huge topic. I loved how all of that was represented, because it's not just like totally utopian. You know, like I was saying at the beginning, there is, you know, you see people navigating conflict, you see misunderstandings, you see like, you know, solidarity and showing up for each other when it's like battle time. And yeah, I liked the how we kind of got into the ship rhythm too of life on the seas, you know, with your crew and your chosen family. And, you know, as part of that, because at the beginning, Mar's, you know, original ship where they were living with their whole original chosen family, like, was killed by the Diablo or sunk or whatever. So we get a lot of survivor's guilt from Mar and feeling bad about, you know, making new relationships and feeling joy again. And that wasn't like super heavy handed on the author's part. It was more like, this is something that any person would deal with in that situation, and then you see them like getting through it and being like, no, these people, my loved ones who are gone, would want me to continue having like a beautiful life. Mar and Baz, we have Grump and Sunshine, which maybe is like an unfair label because like Mar's whole family had just died, so anyone would be immensely grumpy and grief-stricken in that situation. Like, that aside,
yeah,
we get a little bit of like Grump and Sunshine. I just thought Baz was super cute, like ordering coffees that he didn't drink because he wanted Mar around him. I just thought like some of it was like very sweet.
Yeah. And we don't get those like sickly sweet, like saccharine characters super often, I would say. So it was something different. We also get there's only one bed, even though like nothing happened, which is also totally fine. But it was just funny to have it like tick that little box on the romance front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this book was definitely, I think there's like one kiss at the end.
Yeah.
But the author did really good job with the pining, the tension, the will they, won't they, and like obviously they will. It's YA.
Now we're going to talk about writing style, narration, characterization, plot structure, and basically whatever else comes to mind in Kill Your Darlings.
Okay, I mentioned that Vico Ortiz is the narrator, and they're just like so perfect. Could not have been more perfect. They play Jim on Our Flag Means Death, who is the non-binary trans character in that crew. And yeah, and then we have a non-binary trans character in this novel. And I was just like, I love this. I love when this is working so well together.
It's funny because you told me that before I listened to the book, and then I forgot, and then I didn't even recognize their voice at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm just, yeah, I forgot that you had told me this.
You mentioned the author's note a few times, and yeah, I just thought the author's note was great. Like, so explanatory and nuancing, being like, yeah, some pirates did not let people enslave people go. Some people enslaved them further.
Yeah, and I also thought it was cool that they talked about like that, like most of the pirate stories we get are like of white pirates, so like expanding our history of the pirates that are known. And obviously I think like every culture, like other cultures might have different pirates that they think of. Like, I think in the US, like in the US context, we think of like Blackbeard. That's the only pirate I can ever think of. I like that part of the author's note talking about like how different pirates, you know, just from different places, and like Blackbeard's not our only option.
I also want to shout out that Gabe Cole Novoa has a new book that's out already called Most Ardently, a Pride and Prejudice remix, in which Lizzie is a trans guy. So I'm here for it. We love it. We love to trans the classics.
And I think they have another book coming out kind of soon, which I thought had to do with this series because it has like demon in the title, but it is not.
It's different book.
Yeah.
Okay. So there we go. Gabe Cole Novoa. We're watching out.
Yeah. I don't think we have anything for real talk. So do you want to do card questions?
Yeah, I don't think we have anything for real talk. Like, as we said, no notes.
I know.
And we already said that we wouldn't live on a pirate ship, but my current D&D character that I'm playing, this new one, is a chef, former chef on a pirate ship.
That would be a very difficult job, I think.
It would be. Will this book be relevant 30 years from now? Yeah, I think potentially. I think it's like we're seeing like a canon, like a new canon coming out of like trans, non-binary, genderqueer authors of all sorts of racial, ethnic, cultural backgrounds creating these fantasy worlds. And with like so much book banning and stuff going on, depending on the region, I feel like this is forming part of like a new literary tradition that will be important for youth, because, you know, the Christian nationalists are coming for trans people. Yeah. And on that, like, I highly recommend, I'm going to put it in here, the Anti-Trans Hate Machine is a great podcast series. It has two seasons and it goes through like essentially the pivot from the fight against marriage, like gay marriage, to like why all of that, like anti-trans, anti-queer groups is like shifted to the trans agenda, you know? So highly recommend. The most recent episode talks about the New York Times and how they play an important role, essentially laundering super like moral panicky, unfounded like lies about trans people. And then they're, you know, making it more palatable to slash available to like a quote unquote liberal or more mainstream audience. And they're using their, you know, reputation as like a reputable news source to, yeah, make the spread those sorts of ideas. So highly recommend that podcast series.
We'll check it out.
Did you have anything else to say about like, will it be relevant in 30 years? No. Okay.
No, I think it was a great answer.
Which person in power should read this book?
Probably all of them. I mean,
I feel like we've done this question before and that was also our answer.
I know it's hard because like the people in power are like even the liberal ones are not like leftist ones. So I would say, yeah, also read this book.
Yep. What symbols or metaphors does the author use?
The ocean. Ever-changing. It's very like harsh, and I think we see like all of those things that like all the things that we talk about when we talk about the ocean, like we see that encapsulated in Mar, whose name means ocean, which they say in the book, so we didn't talk about that at all, but I think we see like a lot of those traits that we think of in the ocean, we see those in Mar.
Mm-hmm. Unknowable. Yeah, like you said, ever-changing. Love that answer. Great. We did it. Thanks for listening to The Library Coven. We'll be back soon with a discussion of To Shape a Dragon's Breath by Monique Black Goose. And let me just say, I started it, and I'm really glad that I spent my my Libro FM credit on it, because it is so good so far. I'm only like a few hours in, but I'm like, oh, dang, this is going to be like, I bet, top of the top for me. We'll see how it ends up. As always, we'd love to be in conversation with you all. Let us know what you think of the episode, stuff we missed, or say hi by, you know, reaching out to us on Twitter. Nope, not Twitter. Instagram. That's where we are. At The Library Coven.
We are not on Twitter. Twitter doesn't even exist. You can subscribe to The Library Coven on the podcast app of your choice. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you would rate and review the show and spread the word to other cool people. If you're able to support our labor financially, you can make a one-time donation on Ko-fi, support us monthly on Patreon, or by shopping our bookshop.org affiliate page. Until next time, stay magical.